This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. In the diverse tapestry of American society, the voices of African immigrant women are gaining prominence, particularly in the realm of politics. These women come with roots from the vast continent of Africa and bring unique perspectives, resilience, and a commitment to social change, enriching the narrative of women's empowerment in the United States. Quincy Barebe, a Ugandan-American CEO, is running to represent her district here in the state of Maryland. She joins me to talk about her platform and some of the women in history that have inspired her journey. Quincy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jackson.
It's good to see you. All right, so tell me, what inspired you to run for Congress?
I'll just do a small intro about myself. I'm Quincy Barebe. I come from Uganda, in a small city in western Uganda called Mbarara. I'm a Mnyankole. I migrated to the United States in 2010. I came here for school. I did go to Northeastern University. I did accounting and finance. I worked with an accounting firm, KPMG, and then later ventured into working with the Federal Department, Department of Defense. I did some years there, decided to start a business. To me, service has been something that is part of who I am. Mm-hmm. I think I always thought, and I said I have to figure out a way to really advocate and try to help those in need. The business I started, we take care of seniors and people with disability. But even while I was going to school, I was taking care of kids with autism. So I wanted to always give in to the people that I felt that needed me. So my journey has just not started that I woke up one morning and I thought, okay, I want to run for Congress. I think I also...
There's a history of public service.
Absolutely. I did run for a central committee to see how we can help Democrats get elected, to see how I can be of service. I am on a board of director for Anarondo County. Yes. And also I was on the Salary Standard Commission. So I have been involved in the community trying to help in ways that I cannot. Being a woman and being an immigrant, and not only that, and being an immigrant that is just trying to figure out how to really make it. It's not easy.
What are some of the unique challenges that African immigrants face in the U.S.?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, all of us face immigration process. Those that are hardworking, those that mean so good. And second of all, we face the challenges of trying to figure out exactly what our career path is. We first of all think that we do not belong, yet we do belong. So we face the challenge of society because we are told that this is, you can't do education until this way. This is what you have to do. And for me, when I migrated here, and everybody was telling me, we have to go into nursing. Usually most of the Ugandans, either nursing. You either a nurse, either CNA, and that's it.
So there are limited opportunities. Or they limit themselves.
They limit themselves, right. But also limited opportunities for immigrants out there. Mm-hmm. You know, we kind of already categorized by the country saying, this is what immigrants can do. This is what they cannot do. Mm. So because we are, and some of us are told in all the higher corporate places we go to, so we tend to think that's how it's supposed to be. So those are the challenges. And especially the biggest challenge is if I'm told I cannot do something, I have to teach my mind not to.
Absolutely.
Which is very difficult.
Absolutely. Yeah. What message do you hope that your candidacy sends to young black girls that are looking at you and saying, you know, I did not aspire to be a member of Congress. I didn't think I could do it. But if I see Quincy, I see myself in her.
Right. No, I think I will open a lot of doors for women that are immigrants, and not only women that are immigrants, are black women, because I think I consider myself, being the fact that I ran for Congress, I consider myself to have been a voice for them, to have been the thing they have been looking for, saying,
if the representation.
If she can go to Congress, I think I can be able to go to school and be a doctor. I think I can be able to keep going and do something for myself. It's going to be a very big eye-opening for women out there and young girls out there, because I relate to them.
And they relate to you.
Absolutely.
Okay, so March is International Women's History Month,
right?
Obviously. Who are some of the women in history or alive today that inspire you, inspire your political journey or your journey to public service?
Right. One of the women I would first talk about is Hillary Clinton. I think her perseverance of, she kept going on regardless whatever was going on, and she's been in public service for a very long time. I'm very inspired by her because being a public servant is also not easy, especially serving people. And just the fact that you keep going on and keep going on, to me, I found, and a lot of, she's been advocating a lot of women for a lot of women in politics in the United States. So to me, because she's a woman and she's been advocating for more women to be elected, it's very, very, very crucial. I really admire her for that. Mm. Another woman I would think of admiring is Mother Teresa. Her leadership was based on trying to show people that leadership is about care and ability to be able to help those in need. And I very align with that a lot. Mm. All throughout my whole entire journey, I have been dedicated to figure out how to help somebody. And I have done that even when I'm not in office.
Mm.
So for to me, leadership, I think if we elect people in Congress and that care about people, that care about those that I need, that care about just the humanity of it, we will go very far.
Now, elections are in November?
No, May.
May?
May 14th is
May
the 14th. Primary. Yes.
The primary. So you're running in the primary right
yes,
now.
Yes, absolutely.
How are you differentiating yourself from the other candidates? Why should say somebody in your constituency right. vote for you from somebody else? You as a black woman, as an African immigrant.
Yes. There's a big difference between me and my opponents because I have lived at every level of a regular American. And we need people in Congress today that understands what it... I've worked, washed dishes where I'm making $7 an hour. I have gone corporate where I'm making all this... I'm making money, but I'm still squeezed by the taxes that are taking off my paycheck. I've opened a small business, started it, and grown the business. So I have lived all the different skills of a regular American. And we're having people in Congress right now that have not even lived or don't know what it means to even leave the low poverty level.
Mm.
And they're representing us. So I think that's the whole entire big difference. I will understand what it means on a low poverty level.
How do you plan to advocate for immigrants, African immigrants? Because when we talk about African immigrants, when we talk about immigration, which is a key issue in American politics,
yes.
people think about migrants coming from, you know, South America, Mexico, and other places, but we have
yeah,
a big population of African immigrants here in the U.S. How do you plan to advocate for that segment of immigrants? What are some of the key policy issues that you want to, okay, stable when you get in, if you ever, you know, become a congressperson?
Right. If I ever, I am going to become the congressperson. Joking. Immigration is a very, very big varsity topic. And it's very important that you did say that people think immigrants is, hey, we're bringing people into America. No. Immigration is, we're affected in terms of family breakages. You know, we have people here that are, we have immigrants that are in prisons right now for having not committed the crime they shouldn't have been in, but because they're undocumented, they do not look at the exact crime they committed, or they are found in a place and they're in the wrong place at the wrong time. They are put into jail because of their undocumentation. So we have immigrants that are working so hard but are underpaid.
Mm-hmm.
We have employers right now that do not want to pay these specific immigrants.
So there's exploitation of labor.
Mm. There is exploitation of even people, even the system itself.
Mm.
They have not accepted how much immigrants are contributing to our
economy. Right. Let's go back to Uganda. Did you ever see yourself when you just moved to the U.S. running for Congress? Is this an aspiration that you know you had growing up? Not just running for Congress in the U.S., maybe even politics back home.
I did see myself as someone, I wanted to do better for the world. I wanted to do better for myself and the people that around me and for the society. but I did not see myself as running when I was still in Uganda as running for Congress. I didn't know what Congress was anyway. But I knew I would run for some office somehow, but I didn't know what was it. Absolutely.
Right. What does it take to run for Congress as an African immigrant? What kind of advice would you give to African immigrants that are, again, seeing the, you know, Congress or running for Congress or representing their constituency as something that is monumental, that is, they don't even think about it? What does it take? What kind of advice would you give them?
So what I would advise immigrants out there, women like me, young girls like me, and what it takes to really run for Congress, we have to educate ourselves 100%. It's not easy. It's a very, very, very challenging journey. And also what it takes is a lot. You have to raise money. You have to be able to get your name out there. Just the fact that I'm saying these things, they don't seem easy like I'm saying them. Mm. You have to raise a certain amount of money. I'm talking about 500,000 and above to be able to meet up some of the costs. It's not, what I would say is most of us are going to be capped and because of the money. We do not have those donors or the resources or the connections to really raise that amount of money. Mm. But a campaign in America requires money. You need the money. But most of the immigrants are not involved. We need to get involved. You don't have, people run grassroots campaigns. We're running a grassroots campaign. We plan, we're going out door knocking, raising $5, $10. I think everybody or every immigrant out there could raise $5. If we raise $5, $10, $15, we will be able to make a difference where all our voices are heard, because this is home. America is home. Mm-hmm. America is educating our children. America is where our homes are. And if we start having the analogy that we also have to care about the issues, policies are passed every single time, and we do not vote on those policies. We don't go there out there to advocate for these bills being passed. So it's very important, though it's not an easy journey, but no one says you cannot do it.
Mm. So you're encouraging people to involve themselves in the... In the process.
Absolutely.
And you're very right. You know, Africans as a, African immigrants as a constituency often are not talked about when we talk about, you know, in terms of policy, like I said earlier, you know, immigration and so many others. Have you seen an increase of Africans, African immigrants in the U.S., you know, joining politics in the last couple of years? What are some of the things that are pushing them?
Yeah, actually, we've from prior, if I would compare from 2000 when I ran for office in 2017, the number was very low. But now we're having, you know, more immigrants included. I think we've been squeezed up from the policies. I think now some of the people are starting to realize just small issues like childcare, where now people are now educated, saying if you do not really go out there and try to vote for a bill that has to do with childcare, you're going to either be with your kids at home and you won't be able, if you don't have someone to stay with the kids,
you can't afford.
You have to pay childcare $400 a week.
Mm.
And if you have three children, figure out $400 per child, what you're going to do. So we're now starting to realize that, hey, but it's going to take us a while. I'm just saying some of them. And those that are really involved are the ones that either have taken a step to really involve themselves in politics or are trying to run or are trying to help an elected official get into office or they're trying to help someone on their campaign. So, but we still have a lot to do.
Now, you said, again, going back to the theme of International Women's History Month.
Yes.
The two women that inspire you, Mother Teresa and Hillary Clinton.
I forgot to talk about my mom.
Any African women are African politicians or people that inspire you or have inspired you?
I mean, I don't know if you, I'm excused, you know, I'm going to speak about one person that is not a politician. I have to speak about my mom. And the reason why is, for me, being a leader, you don't have to really be in politics. People are different leaders. And being a leader is to have that care, that inner humanity that you are going to change someone else's life. So I would talk about people like my mom who have built a school for children in the village, do not have the resources, but they are trying to do it from their own resources.
Mm.
So to me, that's encouraging. That's me saying that, hey, we still have people like this in this world, you know? So to me, that's
your mother inspires
you.
Yeah,
I think I admire her for that. So, and I really respect her for that. Wherever she is, I hope she can hear. These are the women I really celebrate, and I celebrate all women that have taken initiative, that have worked so hard to make.
To make the world a better place.
Make a world a better place.
Yeah.
That's a good one. And not only that, to also just help those that I need. To really, I have women in my life that have been able to uplift me in business. You know? In business, in support, in advising me in different ways. But they may not realize, but those are women that are changing my life in different ways. So absolutely, I think for me, Women's Day, and we're just recognizing all those women out there, especially, you know, women that have done, made up the difference in the world.
Absolutely. Quincy Barebe, thank you so much for joining us today, and good luck in your campaigns. And I guess we'll see you next time when you're in Congress.
I guess you'll see me in November. Thank you, Jackson, for having
you're
me.
You're very welcome. Now, 25% of Eswatini's rural communities lack clean drinking water. That is according to the charity WaterAid. And another 40% of these communities do not have access to water. Kuhanya Musi has the story from Mafungwane in Lubombo region.
Every day, Jabu Gamete makes a 2-kilometer trek to Mkulubane River, the only water source near a home in Mafungwane in the Lubombo region of Eswatini. Although the water is contaminated and her route is dangerous, with risks of theft and sexual assault, she says she has no other choice.
As the seasons grow hotter and drier, the water we rely on is becoming scarcer. The well that has sustained us for so long is starting to run dry, and our future hangs in the balance.
According to the United Nations, the annual mean temperatures in Eswatini have increased by more than 3 degrees Celsius between 1961 and 2000. These shifts have led to the decreased stream flows in primary river basins and heightened instances of waterborne diseases.
We must wake up early to fetch water before going to school, negatively impacting our studies. By the time we arrive at school, we are already tired and often fall asleep in class.
Our children are sick and our water is unclean. We have no other choice but to drink it, even though we know it will make us ill.
International aid agencies such as WaterAid and World Vision International are working to address the water crisis in Eswatini by funding the construction of water filtering systems and new wells, as well as improvements to sanitation facilities. The Italian aid agency Corporation for the Development of Emerging Countries, or COSPE, is collaborating with the people of Mapungwane in the construction of a new water filtration system set to be unveiled soon.
They raised their own issues, identified the problems affecting them as a result of climate change, and they also come out with some proposed solutions on how they can adapt, how they can address those issues.
In 2023, the Eswatini government allocated funds to improve water supply schemes, which will benefit over 41,000 people. Nokukhanya Musi, VOA News, Mapungwane, Eswatini.
In the past academic year, U.S. colleges and universities saw a nearly 32% increase in Ghanaian students, making Ghana one of the top 25 countries in the world for sending students to the United States. To accommodate the growing interest, the U.S. Embassy in Ghana has opened a new resource center for young people considering an American education. Sinanu Todd reports from Kumasi in Ghana.
At Ghana's Kwame Nkrumah University of Science and Technology in Kumasi, Marilyn Owusu addresses a group of students. Her goal is to inform them about the prospect of studying in the United States. Owusu, born and raised in Ghana, is a U.S.-trained information systems professional. After she finished her studies in the United States, she returned home to start a business, which has been running for more than 20 years. She says her U.S. education was crucial to her success.
Just by the nature of how their systems are shaped. So it empowers you to be able to take advantage of the systems in the U.S., to be able to become who you want to be.
In 22 years, Owusu has helped more than 1,000 Ghanaians pursue studies in the U.S. She consults for Education USA, a network of international student advising centers sponsored by the U.S. Department of State in more than 175 countries. Owusu says American universities use this network to enroll students from Ghana every year.
All schools in the U.S. recognize Education USA. We're able to bring them to Ghana to be able to talk to all students. We are able to assure them that we can coordinate programs for schools in the U.S. So they come and they are dependent on us to be able to give them good programs as to how they can relate to Ghanaian students.
According to the U.S. Embassy in Ghana, in the past academic year, Ghanaian student enrollment in U.S. colleges and universities increased by nearly 32%, and Ghana became the 14th largest sender of graduate students to the country. The introduction of free high school education in Ghana in 2017 has significantly increased the number of graduates, positioning Ghana as an attractive hub for American universities to target prospective students. To help accommodate the growing numbers, the U.S. Embassy has moved to open a new educational research center for students interested in studying in the U.S. The center, called the American Corner, serves as a hub for Northern Ghana to connect to the U.S. through American literature, media, and educational materials.
We have databases that are paid for by the State Department. They are free of charge. We can give you access remotely, and then you can come in here to use it. There are books. And apart from the library, normal library services that we offer, we do programming all year round.
The programs include educational counseling, cultural events, and entrepreneurship training. The embassy says these programs and activities are part of the U.S. strategies to foster mutual understanding and strengthen its relationships with Ghana.
We have a really wonderful relationship that's continuing across all sectors. And at the heart of that is the people-to-people. So when we talk about our exchanges, we're not just exchanging people going to the U.S. and coming back here. It's about ideas and concepts and shared experiences.
There are about 600 American corners and similar venues worldwide, providing programs and events that aim to enhance cultural, educational, and professional exchanges with the United States. Sana Anutod, VOA News, Kumasi, Ghana.
Upfront on the Voice of America. Issues affecting your daily lives.
West African nations are pushing for the construction of a major highway network connecting five countries from the Ivory Coast to Nigeria. The African Development Bank says the project will be an economic engine for all the countries involved. Senano Todd reports from Accra.
Ni Anna Nofori is a traditional leader and the custodian of land in the Ghan East traditional area, just outside Ghana's capital of Accra. His community has been marked for the construction of portions of the 1,028-kilometer-long Abidjan-Lagos corridor. A 3-kilometer-highway tunnel will run through his community.
Having a tunnel in your area, which is one of the first in West Africa, is going to increase the value of our area, the lands, and so on. And many people would like to invest in that area.
The corridor is a transnational highway project aimed at connecting five West African countries, Ivory Coast through Ghana, Togo, Benin, and Nigeria. The ultimate objective, according to the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, is to provide jobs and create a fast-moving economic corridor between the nations. The project was initiated in 2013 by all five countries and has gone through a series of studies and evaluations to develop a 6-lane highway design. It will connect the most economically viable cities, ports, and airports in the sub-region.
So the whole project objective is looking at how we integrate the economies of the West African community We are looking at cross-border and improving cross-border trade. And then we're looking at improving economic and social activities between the communities in the corridor.
There are still issues to be worked out, including ways to run one highway across multiple countries with diverse language systems and legal frameworks. The Economic Community of West African States say construction on the project could begin as early as 2025.
The whole of 2024, we'll be on the market looking for money. If it so happens that a section attracts financing immediately, nothing stops us from starting.
The plan envisions future connections to other countries, creating a continent-wide network of 9 highways spanning from Cairo to Cape Town and from Dakar to Djibouti. The next step, according to ECOWAS, is to connect Dakar to the Abidjan-Lagos corridor. Sana Lutod, VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
You're watching Upfront on the Voice of America. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Liz Kemigisha from Kampala, Uganda, and I love listening to Upfront.
Yo, this is Emmanuel Jal. You're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America with Jackson.
Welcome back, and let's go to Somalia, where a young boy has taken it upon himself to feed the neglected dogs and cats he finds on the streets of Mogadishu. His inspiring mission is a call to action. And Jamal Ahmed Osman reports from Mogadishu.
19-year-old Hussein Abdurrahman comes to this butcher shop every day to buy 8 to 10 kilograms of meat for Mogadishu's stray animals.
He is such a kind person. It's wonderful to show compassion and kindness to those who cannot afford it. He deserves support for this initiative.
Nearly 70% of Somalis live in poverty, making it challenging for many to afford food for their families, let alone for their pets. So Abdurrahman is filling that gap.
My goal is simple, to spread love and kindness throughout society. It's not just about animals, it's about reaching every corner of our community, from humans to animals, with compassion.
There are no official numbers for the street animals roaming the streets of Mogadishu, but they are part of the urban scenery, feeding the animals' demand both time and money. Abdurrahman, who works at a commodity shop, dedicates a significant portion of his modest income to this cause. He learned his compassion from his grandfather, who also fed stray animals.
When you spend your money on good things, surely you will get back more, and your good deeds are already recorded by the angels.
Each day, Abdurrahman feeds 20 dogs and 30 cats along with some birds. The animals recognize him and rush to him. And every day, he has a crowd of human admirers.
If all Somalis were like him, we would live in a better country. I encourage everyone in the neighborhood and in Somalia in general to support people like Abdurrahman because they spread love and kindness.
Somalia lacks an effective animal organization dedicated to the needs of stray animals, and the country lacks robust policies to protect them. Abdurrahman, a proud dad to 3 cats, aims to address this issue by creating an organization to support stray animals and extend his efforts nationwide. Jamal Ahmed Usman, VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
And with that, we come to the end of our show today. Many thanks to our guests and to you for tuning in. Remember to join us at voaafrica.com, where you can watch this program and other programs. We are at VOA Upfront on Facebook and other social media platforms, also on YouTube, where you can watch our videos. Remember to like, to share, and to subscribe. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Goodbye, everyone.